What matters to you?
How are you going to work differently?
Are you having great conversations?
How can we support you to work differently?
It's all about people.
It's all about people.
It's all about people.
Hi, you're listening to the It's All About People podcast with me, Matt Evans. I've managed to keep the microphone for another week, keeping Alison at bay. I know she's desperate to get hold of it again and do another one. And she's got some really interesting topics coming up that'll be good for everyone to listen to, and kind of thinking about how the workforce develops across the hours roles and everywhere across the system, Lincolnshire County Council and in the health system. So, yeah, I'll let her have another go at some point. Anyway, that's enough waffle from me. Today I'm really excited. I'm talking to a chap I met a couple of months ago. We've connected on Twitter, and we've been to a couple of workshops together. But Lee Vaughan is a special guy with a real special story, all to do with chronic pain. And when he sort of talks, I can feel that a little bit around that personalization connection and that experience, that support in self-management, bit about patient activation measure comes through. Anyway, it's just a real good story from somebody who has got lived experience and continues to live with that experience. So I'll bring him in and you can introduce yourself, Lee. Lee, welcome to the It's All About People podcast.
Good morning, Matthew. Thank you for having me. It's great to be part of this conversation. Looking forward to sharing a few things.
Yeah, no, great. And thanks for joining us. So just kick us off. Just tell us a little bit about you and you know, what your story is, if you like.
Okay, so my story is I've lived with persistent pain since my mid to late teens. You know, I turned 50 the other week, so it's over 32 years now that I've been living with this 24-hour pain, but pain that's always remained unexplained. No, nobody could ever give an answer. It's this or it's that, and as patients, we're always conditioned to find that fix or want that fix. And it's never found. And every time we turn down a new road, we hit another brick wall. It's another blind alley that there's no answers. And we come across these facts of you've just got to learn to live with it. And the messaging around that is really important. How we say those sort of things is really important as to how they land. But living with pain for 30 odd years now, but it's only in the past 2 years that I've started to, and I will use the word control, started to learn to take control of that pain a little bit more, just by learning, understanding and education.
Yeah. Well, many happy returns for the recent birthday. I think some of the things that we're going to have a little chat about, I want to talk about that journey you've had through the activation sort of model. Definitely want to talk about that. I think there's something around community that we need to talk about, because I know you're a real big advocate for that. I also know that you've had a recent trip, Lady Bow Reservoir, was it? You know, you like your cycling, don't you? You like a bit of exercise, so definitely want to touch on that. And then, obviously, we've got to talk about our mutual friend, Dr. Ollie Hart, one of the nicest guys in healthcare.
Absolutely.
So I want to talk a little bit about the work he's doing with you around the sort of coaching approach for pain management. So let's start with going back to where it began for you, if you like, and you know you're in pain. What's the bit that kind of gets you that first interaction with the health system as from pain? What's that moment?
Wow. If I'm going back to when I was 18, if we're talking about that's the first moment. It was the knowledge of something you'll be familiar with, mate, is playing football at weekends, but then not being able to recover for 5 days at 18 years of age. That's not normal. No. I stood out from the crowd a little bit. Why was it that I played football at a weekend, but I then had pain for 5 days and I couldn't recover and I couldn't train? I stood out from the crowd of things like that. You know, if I suffered an injury, I'd be rushed to hospital in excruciating pain, only to be found it was barely anything wrong. Mm. It was weird. And you start to develop a label as to, oh yeah, the guy that cries wolf. And I think that was where I first started to interact with healthcare professionals about this pain that was very random.
And as a young guy, 18, wanting to play football, that must have felt, I don't know what, a little bit alien. Because we don't tend to think pain and young people, do we? We tend to think, well, pain's arthritis, and it's what happens as you get older, you're getting pain. But at 18, that's quite a lot to carry.
Completely, and I think that's where being dismissed starts as well. Come on, you're a young lad. Just get on with it. You know,
wet sponge.
Off, do this. That's the stuff. Yeah, here's a bit of magic spray. You know, but that pain was real. And you know, all right, maybe I'd only turned an ankle, but it felt like I'd broken a leg. It was violently real at times. But it stood me out from a lot of people. And you know, I was known as the guy that had his own parking bay at the hospital. I was that much of a regular. I was a bit of a laughing stock with it, but ultimately it's what made me stop playing. I stopped playing because of the amount of times I was visiting hospitals, the amount of times I was visiting a GP for a pain in the knee, a pain in the groin, a pain in the back, a pain in the neck. I was there a lot, and you know, it was eventually a threat from my employer. To make the choice, you either choose to continue playing football in spare time, or you choose this job.
That's quite a lot to deal with as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. You don't need that kind of. I mean, it's not like I was some sort of semi-professional footballer. Please don't get me wrong. It was just something I did in the Sheffield leagues as a pastime. But to be told you need to stop because we can't afford for you to be having so much time off due to injuries. You know, like I said, that's at sort of 19, 20, 21 years old. That's not normal.
No. No. So we've got Lee, the hypochondriac footballer, that is now, he's got work on his case saying, come on, you need to make a decision. You're already feeling like you don't fit in with your peers because you seem to be the one that's always injured, and you've got the pressure from work. What's life like going through the 20s, Lee? What's going on in there?
Pain, basically, Matt. You know, it was just this inexplicable pain. And I remember once being sent for a round of physiotherapy at the Northern because I'd had this pain in my groin, really nasty pain. And I ended up having this deep tissue ultrasound massage, which was worse than the pain I went in with for. You know, I went in with pain and it was like, here you go, have some more of this. It was just pain, pain and pain. And my life was becoming limited more and more. You know, I was realizing I couldn't walk great distances. Things were just not right. I was told I had one leg longer than the other. That was the reason for my pain. You know, I had a couple of hernias and things like that. They're natural things. But life was just, it wasn't what I wanted it to be. And I think for a lot of people that live with chronic pain, you don't actually realize that you're in this constant grief cycle. You're grieving the person you were and you're grieving the person you want to be. So you're constantly in this cycle of grief and you're very much unaware of that, very much unaware of that. And then got married at 25, had two great kids, and just noticed couldn't quite be that active dad at 25, 26 years old. Just alarm bells were constantly ringing. Phoning the doctor, this is hurting now, that's hurting now. And yeah, I think you do, understandably, start to get that reputation as a bit of a hypochondriac.
So I'm sure all the health professionals that you met in that time, on each interaction, probably were thinking, how can I best help Lee? You know, what's the sticking plaster that I need to apply here? And that's not criticising them. I'm sure that all comes from a place of wanting to help and be helpful. But actually, when you're going saying, oh, I've got this pain in my groin, you're actually carrying with you the pressure of the job, the pressure of the social group. Now you've thrown in the wife and the kids. There's quite a lot going on around you, isn't there? And then you've just used that phrase, which really resonated with me when we spoke last about grief. And grief is a emotional pain, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And one of the things that you talked to us about was that the brain doesn't necessarily differentiate, does it, between emotional pain and physical pain?
It doesn't. And, you know, for someone that lived with pain for 30 odd years, to hear that science in year 31 is one, it was enlightening and it was the piece of science that changed my life. But two, it was deeply frustrating and it provoked a lot of anger. to think, well, if we knew this, why did nobody ever talk to me about that? You know, grief sits in my life, losing my dad as a 10-year-old boy, losing grandparents early, losing me. Mm. You know, I never understood that. And grief is a huge part. And when we have these neural pathways in our brain, and the neural pathway that transmits physical pain, the signals that alert us to physical pain, they're the same neural pathways that transmit emotional pain. They drive down the same road. It's the same messaging. So emotional trauma, emotional pain can actually be when it hits the brain can actually flip on, if you like, the pain switch. Mm-hmm. And that's where you start to have this psycho and social influence in pain, not just the bio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really fascinating. And for me, learning about it more recently, bit like you, that year 31 piece, it's almost like, how come I managed to get to my age without ever having this conversation before? And I'm a guy that's fortunately not living with the pain as you are. So you just added there around as well that that emotional trauma of losing your dad when you were mm-hmm. young. And then you say about, you know, grandparents dying. Many of us listening will have lost somebody. So is there any advice around understanding that emotional piece that you feel kind of, I don't know, it's on, not to prevent it from becoming worse, but to almost front it up and face it up?
Yeah, I think you're on the right lines with that. And I think part of coming to terms with pain is the same as coming to terms with grief. It's the acceptance. And obviously this all happened to me back in the 80s. You know, my mum was 37 years old at the time. You know, how do you deal with being a 37-year-old widow and bringing up two young boys that have just at the flick of a switch lost their dad? You know, things were tough for her. You know, she was told she was too young to qualify for widow's benefit. I mean, that's the kind of era we lived in. Oh, I'm sorry, maybe my husband should have waited another 3 years, and then, you know, we'd have had a little bit of financial security as well. So the pressure she was dealing with, it's suffice to say, I didn't just lose my dad that night. I kind of lost my mum as well. I lost the mum I had before, because she couldn't be that person again, because she had to be a mum and a dad and the one that earned the money. I mean, the pressures were intense, and the whole family dynamic changed. But at no point, I think, were we as a family, or even me individually, just given the opportunity to talk, to be heard. I can remember being given the opportunity once, and I shut it down. I just shut it down. No. That doesn't mean it might not work the week later, or a week later, or maybe after 3 months. You know, grief takes time. It has to be processed. And I think my mum shut it down because she just had to get on with the two young boys. I shut it down because I didn't want to think about it as a 10-year-old boy. I don't know how we expect a 10-year-old boy to process that kind of trauma. It was just shut down. It was put in a box and it was packed away and it was thrown into the subconscious to bite me hard later in life.
Yeah, well, let's move forward to later in life. So I think it's safe to say, from anybody that's kind of listened to us talk about patient activation measure, you know, you're showing, and you've shared with us there, some of that kind of disengaged, overwhelmed, low levels of activation in you, because you are, understandably so, dealing with grief and trauma and carrying that, plus the social pressures of wanting to play football and the work pressures, everything else we've talked about. And obviously, anybody who's married knows that there's pressures there as well, and kids. So we build up this cacophony of pieces, don't we? And it's bubbling away. What moves you from being disengaged and overwhelmed by it to coming on a podcast and talking about it, or chatting with Dr. Ollie Hart about it, and some of the other stuff that we'll talk about that you do? What's the shift?
The shift for me was curiosity. And I hear that word used a lot with people with lived experience. And if I use that word with them, they'll go, yeah, that was it. And what happened is I got enrolled on a pain management program. Didn't want to go, Matt. Right. I just thought, you know, this is talking therapy. What on earth is this going to do? My pain's the real stuff. You know, that's not for me. But the thing was, Matt, in January 22, I was signed off work. I was off work and I was off for about 4 months. I was taking 28 tablets a day. I was in a dark, dark place. I'd had the conversation with my wife that, you know what, I don't think I'm going to work again.
Right.
And I was 47 years old at that point. And that was the place I was at. And I know sometimes people say you've maybe got to reach rock bottom to finally be able to start to build your way out. I don't know if I want to believe that. I'm not sure. But for me, at that point in my life, yeah, that's where I was at. And I went to this pain management program and I just thought, this is not for me. But, and I hear this word again a lot, last chance saloon. That's kind of how it felt to me. And I turned up and on day one, I just thought, when are they bringing the straitjackets? You know, these guys are nutters. You know, right. Meditation, Qigong, visualization. I'm a Yorkshireman, for goodness sake. This, you know, I don't do this. Put my flat cap on and I'll get my whippet and my pipe out. but there was just something. There was just something that made me want to stay on. And I know attrition rates in pain management programs are quite low, but you don't have to catch us all every time. You know, you may just catch a low percentage, but that's going to start making a difference. And in that program, I started to hear things. I started to see things. I watched a video of a guy called Sean Jennings down in Cornwall. He does an awful lot of work for pain management and for lived experience. And it was his video that started to turn light bulbs on for me. And I genuinely think, Matt, it was because it was a bloke.
Right.
The most people that you hear from within chronic pain tend to be female.
Right.
I think, personally, I just think they're better equipped to deal with emotion and talking. The mums, and I think they're just biologically better prepared than we are as men. You know, we're supposed to just tough it out and grunt and get on with it. But there was this bloke on the screen in front of me that just told this really, really hard story of a dark place, hard times, but of that journey of discovery. And curiosity seemed to sit in it all. He was made curious by science. How can that be? How can that be? And you start to find evidence. I used to go to that program, Matt, and it was a 4-hour thing. And I'd walk through the doors, I'd get there in a lot of pain, and so did everybody else. But for that 4 hours, it was like someone took a control switch and turned it down.
Right.
How can that be? And that's where the curiosity came. We used to do Qigong movements. Why did the pain suddenly dip away when I did that? We'd do visualizations. I'm a Yorkshireman, Matt. We don't do that. But this nurse just wrote this story and told this story. And she just said, what did you think to that? And I said, I genuinely wish I could take you home with me. Because that just switched everything off. It was fantastic. It made me curious.
What a fantastic moment for you in this story. And I'm thinking prior to that, there must have been some nudges. You know, you said like a shutting down the offer of talking therapy early. But that probably, it probably sits with you, doesn't it, that you've turned that down. It's probably in the locker somewhere. And then no doubt there's more bits, there's more interactions. You said 28 tablets. I mean, that's a phenomenal amount. You must have rattled when you walked down the street.
Oh, indeed.
But how did you get to that point, though?
Without trying to sort of bash GPs here, Matt, because I'm past that, it doesn't sit with me. You know, yeah, maybe I've got reason to do in certain circumstances, but it doesn't serve me to do that. But it was this contact with GPs, and I'm going somewhere with this, and I think the point will come later. I was probably seeing the GP 2 to 3, maybe 4 times a month. It wasn't face-to-face, it was a phone call. And those 10-minute consultations were, I mean, I now look at it and think, well, you're not gonna sort me out in 10 minutes. You can't. Mm. And I do feel sorry for healthcare professionals in that. You can't sort this. And the simple thing a GP can do is deal quickly with a medical response. You know, let's try this tablet. Let's try that tablet. Let's try and blend this one. Let's maybe blend this with this. But I was taking gabapentin, which is neuropathic. I was taking naproxen, which is anti-inflammatory. I was taking codeine and nefropam, which are opiate. I was taking sertraline, which is antidepressant. I was on the omeprazole to stop it all ruining my guts. And you look at that and think, yeah, I was rattling. And I remember taking my tablets into work one day and shaking them at my boss and saying, that's what it takes to get me here today. Mm-hmm. That was the anger that I was sort of sitting with. So I think I ended up getting to that point because I just kept going back to the doctor and saying, it's not going away. It's not getting any worse. What can we try? You know, oh, my friend's tried this, or I've heard somebody can try that. And yeah, I ended up at a point where 28 tablets a day, and I was in the worst pain of my life.
Mm. I suppose in that time, there's that shift in the way, you know, you reference there, sort of hearing from other people and what your friends had tried and stuff. So you want to get out of pain, and that's the agenda. But as you are going back to GP and other healthcare professionals, and you try, you know, credit to them for listening to you, I suppose, mm-hmm. rather than dismissing you. But you've almost got these short fire interactions, aren't you, that are very medical, very kind of let's find a magic pill or a mixture, a cocktail of pills that is going to help you get to work and just keep going. But yet underneath it all, as you now know, there's grief, there's suffering, there's that build up of all the socio stuff as well. So I think that's a fascinating movement to that point. When do you then move to, I need to stop taking all these tablets? The tablets aren't the answer.
Again, that was pain management. Right. And we had an entire week discussing medication. And I've never had tablets explained to me so well than in that four-hour day. And you start to understand what each one's for, what it should be doing, what the dosages should be. The fact that resonated with me, Matt, was when they said to us that, you know, at best, in chronic pain, the medication is somewhere between 20 to 30% effective.
Right.
And I remember sitting aghast and thinking, I'm swallowing 28 tablets and you're telling me that 20 to 30% I'm going to get out of this? That's ridiculous. And trust me, at that point, I was a different person. I was a different human being. You know, when you're taking gabapentoids, they dull everything down. I mean, they actually didn't do much to the pain from my recollection, but they dulled me down. Mm. And I just wasn't the person that I aspired to be. And I think at that point, you start thinking, well, what on earth am I doing then? For 20%, let's say it's 20%, why am I taking all that? And all these side effects and then tablets to counteract side effects.
Mm.
It's just this, and certainly I was aware that I wasn't functioning like I'd like to. You know, you were walking around comatose half the time, and the only time you were pain free was generally when you were knocked out of sleep. You know,
so you were aware of that. You were aware that you weren't Lee. You were.
Oh yeah,
a shadow.
Was I? Maybe I'm aware now. Maybe it was a little bit of denial as well.
Right.
My family certainly knew.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Knew. Yeah, what did people say about you at that time or to you? Could they get through to you? Could they talk to you? Were you there?
I don't. The difficulty is, Matt, I didn't understand it. So because I couldn't understand it, then they had no chance of understanding it. All they saw was this grumpy old geezer in the corner that was no fun and just bit people's heads off left, right and centre for no reason whatsoever. And that was the guy that it turned me into. It turned me into that guy in the workplace. I became an absolute... I'd apologise to my bosses in this day and age now for the guy that it turned me into at work as well. I caused mayhem. You know, but that was just that repressed rage that was starting to overspill. That glass was now so full that it was spilling over, and now it was starting to come out, and it was coming out in my personal life, and it was coming out in my work life as well.
Mm.
It changed me completely. It's horrible.
Yeah, that's... I mean, you're such an emotionally intelligent person to be able to look back on that, aren't you, and recognise where you're at. The image that came straight to mind there was what you posted around the plug hole at Lady Bower Reservoir.
Yeah.
You know, when our glass is full, it's got to go somewhere, hasn't it? And sure enough, it spills out at great force. So we've kind of gone through some quite dark moments there. I know in your stories where you've talked about things like at work having having stresses and issues there. You've talked about traumas, all these things that happen. So let's fast forward now to you've got your curiosity, you've got a little bit of inkling of some science, the tablets are cutting down. What's the light at the end of the tunnel? What's kind of, I know you've mentioned curiosity, but what's that next piece that ends up with you going, oh, I'll come on a webinar and talk to health professionals?
Wow. So the curiosity leads to acceptance. So acceptance leads to a change in lane. You come out the slow lane, you come into the middle lane for sure. It's a real shift. I think what disheartened me about the whole experience through pain management was when we finished and they said, right, guys, that's it.
Right.
And I was like, oh, what do you mean that's it? We've just spent 9 weeks, and this is not their fault, by the way. 9 weeks, and you've literally started to change my life. You're giving me a toolkit. You're helping me assemble this stuff, and now it's a case I feel like a lemming just been jumping off a cliff. And it was really disheartening, and I could see it was disheartening for the healthcare professionals too.
Yeah.
And they said to me, look, the only way this can really evolve through budgeting and red tape and through politics is it has to come from within the community. And for some reason at that point, I just thought, well, I work in an industry where I think I can reach that community. I've got the experience of living with pain for a long, 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 long time. But I've now got this experience of it's not what I thought it was.
Mm.
And that message has to get out. It has to get out. We have to help others. And it was more of that feeling that I think I can make a difference with this. You know, just like Sean's video changed my way of thinking, almost in that instant, maybe I could do that for one or two other people. And then we can start this cascade and let's start to help, you know, let's start to help turn the tide a little bit, not just for people living with pain, though. You know, it was very much from my perspective, we need to target healthcare professionals too. We need this. I often sat there and thought, is it a bottom-down approach or is it, sorry, a bottom-up approach or is it top-down? And it's both, isn't it? Mm. We need both. We need to build a bridge. Currently, there's this huge river flowing between the healthcare professional and the people living with chronic pain. And all that seems to happen at the moment is the people with chronic pain reach out to the healthcare professional, but we don't get there and we fall in that river. And then it's when we get downstream later, they're having to drag us out. Well, you know, what if we can build that bridge? What if we can build a bridge where the healthcare professionals and the patients can meet in the middle over that river and we stop them falling in right at the very beginning? And from that, a friend of mine who had gone to school with and we reconnected with after a long, long time, he lives with chronic pain too, sort of said to me, you could do something with this. And it started with a WhatsApp group that didn't particularly work. And it was all, could we use social media? Could we do something with social media? Could we create an online community, almost like a pain management program, follow-on, online, where it could just be hosted by people with lived experience, sharing stories, health and well-being signposting, the development of ideas. And that was sort of became my focus, and it took off.
I'm going to have to jump in here to tell people, because obviously being a podcast, it's audio. Yeah. The way your face lights up when you talk about that is fantastic. You know, the passion that you've got for it is brilliant. So, you use the word community. I'm keen that we talk about community, because one of the things that we've both heard with our work with Flipping Pain colleagues is that kind of you are not alone. This isn't just one person, which obviously for you in that football team, you isolated, you know, at work, isolate. Suddenly that sense of community, how important is it that we have a community of people around us that get us and understand us when we're talking about pain?
I think it's crucial, Matt. I really, really do, because I started to realise when I said I went to these pain management programmes and the pain just seemed to mysteriously turn down. I think it was because I started to realize I was around people that didn't judge me, that actually would say to me, yeah, I understand that. And this happens too, doesn't it? I said, yeah, it does. How do you know that? Well, we've got this commonality. We've got this theme and we understood each other. And it was so powerful to be around people that just understood. They didn't judge. And it was almost like I was making, it's like that I was going to school again and I was making new friends. Mm. but a group of friends that really understood. And I think for me, it was, what if we could make that bigger? If we could make that bigger, that could be a really, really powerful tool where people living with pain are the experts. That might dent a few egos. I don't really mind doing that. But we are. We're the expert in our pain. You put a pain management program together, and there was 14 on ours. You got 14 experts in a room. 14 experts in pain who shared ideas. They shared symptoms. They shared techniques. They shared understanding. And it was incredibly powerful. And I just thought this could be incredibly powerful if we made it bigger. Mm-hmm. And that was the goal.
We're talking a lot at the moment, we're really trying to drive the Our Shared Agreement agenda in Lincolnshire, which is about people and the relationship they have with the system. And that idea that, you know, there are experts, whether they are, you know, medical experts or, you know, it could be GPs or surgeons, whatever. They've got experts because they really understand their subject. Mm-hmm. But you're the expert in you, as you've just articulated, aren't you? And having that shared relationship where you can trust each other, where you can get the science, the knowledge, the medication when it's appropriate, all that kind of stuff. But that understanding of you and your world as a real life person living with, in this example, pain, but it could be anything. So we talk about how do we make the most of what we've got, and that there you are making the absolute most of a community that you're building. And I know you've mentioned social media at the moment, and is that like the, I guess it's better than a doctor's waiting room for meeting people, isn't it, social media? So that gateway, what does that enable? Obviously the chat, but what kind of things are happening?
When we started it, or when I started it, I wanted sort of three things. We wanted health and well-being signposting, so to share ideas. It really shocked me then, and it still shocks me now, that I can sit and talk with healthcare professionals and I mention flipping pain. I mention pain concern. They've never heard of them.
No.
I mean, this is the UK's public awareness campaign. It's a public health campaign. And it's changing lives all over the UK. You know, it's a game changer. But for people who are sat opposite me as a GP or a health coach or whoever, if you don't know that this stuff exists, then you really are on a lost leader, because that is the first simple thing we can do. And that was one thing I wanted the group to be about, is look, let's share the stuff that's out there, because there are websites out there. You've got the Live Well with Pain program, the Footsteps Festival, there's Rethinking Pain, there's Pain Concern, there's Flipping Pain. There's so much out there that is all, it's information, and you can absorb it at your own pace, because a lot of this stuff that people need to hear over time is hard to hear as well. It's not what you want to hear. You're not going to hear quick fixes. You're just going to hear about a lifestyle and behavior change. So what goes on in this group is someone may come across something else. Have you heard about this group that happens in this part of the... It started off as the city. Now it's working to be in the UK. There's people from all over the UK in it. And we started to try and evolve movement groups, exercise programs. Could we make contacts to devise this kind of stuff? We have a lady that comes in and does a gratitude talk every Friday. She just writes a gratitude piece about what's gone right during the week. And that gets copied by 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 people each Friday night when she does it. But it's a lovely way to pick out the positives in your week and just filter out the negatives, because there's a lot of negatives. What I didn't expect the group to evolve into was for it to become a learning platform for healthcare professionals.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the split is, but I would suggest that 30 to 40% of the group are healthcare professionals. They don't exist in the group for advice. They don't exist in the group to diagnose people. They are there to learn, and they listen to the conversations we have. You spoke about me going to the lady bar and taking that picture of the plug hole, because that just completely encapsulates that glass that we carry around with us every day. It's going to overflow and it needs somewhere to go. And sometimes little things like that's what I saw when I saw that view. And I know that if I post that, that will make sense to people living with pain. Someone not living with pain is probably going to think, I don't get, what's that? I don't understand that.
Well, I looked at it, mate, and I went, oh, that's how I feel about the build-up and the pressure I'm under with so many different, you know, plates spinning in work, in life. And actually, yeah, just pull the plug out and let a bit out. That would really help. So yes, I get what you're saying. But for me, I saw the picture and I went, yeah, no, that makes sense for me. Anyway, so you mentioned about the healthcare professionals in that group, mm-hmm. and you know, that's sort of 30-40% of them. I've got a bit of sympathy, a lot of sympathy for them in kind of how the community sector moves so much faster than the health sector, because people like you go, I've been on this course for 9 weeks and now I'm finished it. I need to do something here. And you, as a highly activated person, step in that gap and go, come on, we'll have a community. And the system doesn't necessarily, you know, you've done that. So it has to catch up. And I think that's what we're seeing a lot of at the moment, is people going, oh, there's new ways of working. We're prepared to do things differently. We can work with the voluntary and community sector, and we can work across boundaries. And it's just taking time for that to come through. But I think it will happen. And one of the reasons why I feel confident is people like Dr. Ollie Hart, Peak Health Coaching, and their offer around the coaching approach to pain management for teams. So obviously that's the course that I went on and where we got chatting. Talk to me about why you're so keen to be involved with that.
It's crazy, isn't it, how that came about? Because I set up a WhatsApp group and then things seemed to spiral. I ended up on Radio Sheffield, and the medical expert they brought in on that particular interview was Ollie Hart. And I heard the interview played back and I just thought, my goodness, this guy gets it. Mm. By gum, he really gets this. And I just took to Twitter to thank him for it as a private message. And from there, it started with a coffee. It started with a chat. And then it started with Ollie saying, we could do things together. I really think there's a place for you to sit alongside people like me and what I'm trying to do. And I didn't know where that was going to go at that point in time. But I've been on his health coach course. So I'm a qualified health coach now. It gives me an insight in how we need to be sitting with people that live with pain, not just pain, mental health, metabolic health, diabetes, the whole spectrum of things. And that then evolved into Ollie's offer of, how would you feel about delivering pain education alongside me to healthcare professionals? And for me, it was just like, absolutely. Because I've done it before. Yeah, let me add them, absolutely. I'd done it before at a couple of events, and it was apparent to me, the co-presenter, and even the audience, that once the lived experience view started to come across, you could literally see the shutters coming up on people. And these are healthcare professionals. You could see light bulbs going on. And it was, wow, this is really powerful. And Ollie was in the room and a few others were in the room. And I think at that point, we all thought, this has to be the way forward. Because look how they're responding to what Lee is saying. Because you can't really argue with what I'm saying a lot of the time, because I'm the expert in my condition. And I was flooded afterwards in the tea breaks and in the coffee areas with people, question after question after question. And at that point, I think Ollie and myself just thought, this is really powerful, and we have to do something with it.
And obviously, if anybody's listening and they want to access that training for their teams, you know, the setup is a team of healthcare professionals doing a workshop together and then going away doing a little bit of work, and then a second workshop, which is split into two groups, isn't it? And you've got the coaches and you've got the prescribers, and they then come back together after those second workshops, and it's around that kind of, how does our team have a fresh approach to pain management? And you can find out much more about that on peakhealthcoaching.com/pain-management. There you are. There's a shameless plug for Ollie Hart.
Oh, he deserves it. He's great.
He does. So with such positivity, I feel like we should kind of round off there. So if I asked you to give us a message for the workforce, you know, a couple of top tips, what would that be, Lee? You know, what's the real take on message when it comes to pain management and working with people with lived experience?
When working with people with lived experience, you simply need to allow them time to be heard. Just listen. Quite often, you're not going to see the pain. But if you hear the story, and you hear it well, you'll hear the pain. Now, there may be biological causation. It can be psychological causation. It can be social. It's the biopsychosocial model. And I think that's what people need. And I know that's a difficult thing. I know that's hard in the current setup we have in healthcare. GPs only having 10 minutes. But why not sequence weekly appointments? Have 6 10-minute appointments over the course of 6 weeks, and that person's going to have an hour. And the ultimate goal is to, and I like to use myself as the example here. I don't know the costs, Matt. I don't know the monetary terms of this, but 2 years ago, out of work, didn't think I was going to return. 28 tablets per day. What is the cost of that? Average 2 to 3 visits to a GP every month. So somewhere between 24 to 36 appointments a year chasing this fix. Now times that by the estimated 28 million people that are living with chronic pain. Those are scary numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But what if we can replicate me? What if we can create more of me? Not just me, there are others like me, where I take one tablet a day now. How much is that saving the NHS in costs? I'm back in the workforce, working part-time, contributing, and also now working self-employed as well. So I didn't give up my job. I'm self-sustaining again, and I'm living a more valued life. I've seen my GP once in 16 months.
Really?
And that was a telephone call. And when I've spoken to people like Ollie, and they estimate that almost 80% of their caseloads as GPs are chronic health, not just chronic pain, mental health, chronic pain, diabetes. And when it comes to chronic health, we can't deal with it in 10-minute consultations. But if we can sort of take the time, create people like myself and others around the UK, what financially is the cost? What have I personally saved the NHS in what I do? But from my perspective and for people living with pain, what's the value of the quality of life I have now as well?
Wow.
You can't put money on that.
What a question. Yeah. Well, let's finish on that. There's a couple of things we haven't talked about. You know, like the physical activity, obviously the football, you're now cycling, aren't you? So
yep.
That, you know, you're still doing a bit of that. There's a bit of running and stuff that we've talked about before. Also, the gratitude comment you mentioned, I loved that when we talked about having time on a Friday just to think, what am I grateful for this week? What are the, you know, who can I thank for enhancing my week this week? And, you know, I want to show that gratitude right now, Lee, and say, I really enjoyed the chat again. I've heard this before, and it still makes me feel really kind of not proud of you in a patronising way, mate, but just really kind of like, well done, Lee. That's just inspirational stuff. So thank you for being willing to share it. And I will do my best to share it onwards and hopefully help get that awareness raised amongst health and care professionals so that they get that there's another way of thinking about pain, and there's some resources out there like Flipping Pain, like Peak Health Coaching, all that. So yes, thank you ever so much. I hope it hasn't been
too. Thank you. Yeah, no, it's been great, mate. It's been great, mate. You know, I keep saying, look, give lived experience a little bit of a platform. Let us be part of the conversation, not just the topic, because we've got a lot to say and a lot can be learned from us.
On that note, thank you very much.
Cheers, Matt.
Cheers. Bye now. Thanks for listening.